They did it again.
Both of those saddle tramps, as she now saw Buck and Jason, remained behind, professing illness again. She looked up sharply from the elbows' deep soap suds when their coarse laughter reached her in the wash house attached to the outer kitchen wall. Through the small square window, she saw them lolling around, obviously in perfectly good health. She had sent Bobby out with the hands today. Now she was thankful she had. While she watched, Buck and Jason drew their lanky frames upright and ambled in the direction of the bunkhouse well pump. She gave her washing an angry drubbing on the washboard and then abandoned it. Wiping her arm, she headed to the kitchen. She had pies in the oven and biscuits yet to do. When she stepped out of the wash house, Buck and Jason were nowhere in sight.
What are they up to now?
In the kitchen, she pulled the four large deep dish pies from the oven and slid in two big pans of biscuits. That accomplished, she dusted her hands together in satisfaction. Now she'd better cut vegetables for the stew. She strode to the sink and pumped water into a granite pan. Bending down, she pulled carrots, potatoes, turnips, and onions from their storage bins. As she came upright, her eye caught movement through the window. Buck and Jason were back. The two young saddle tramps were heading directly toward the kitchen. Tyrone Beale and his battered henchmen sat nursing their wounds in a saloon on Beacon Street. After they downed several shots of liquid anesthetic, their bravado found new life.
We are not gonna let two country hicks get the best of us, are we, boss?
Not on your ass.
I want a piece of that Frenchy bastard.
Well, me too.
Boys, we're not gonna let him get away with it. We'll get them both, even if we have to shoot him in the back.
You tried that. There's three of us dead for it.
What's done is done. The thing is, we drop everything else until we can fix their wagon.
Beale had no idea of how soon the opportunity would come. Even while he detailed a plan for ambushing Smoke Jensen and Louis Longmont separately, a young Chinese entered the saloon. Walking softly in his quilted shoes, the Chinese youth approached the table.
I have a message from you from Shang-Li. Here it is.
He offered a scrap of rice paper. Beale opened the folded page and read carefully.
Smoke Jensen and Louis Longmont are strolling around Chinatown bold as brass dragons. It is an insult to the triad. The Tong leaders have met and consider it wise and more convenient if other Kua Lo take care of them. You and your railroad police are to come at once. The messenger who brought this will lead you to your quarry. Young.
This says you can take us to some men we want rather badly, is that so?
Oh, yes.
Then do so.
The door to the Jensen kitchen flew open, and the two young drifters swaggered in. Sally looked askance at him from where she stood washing vegetables. She dropped the paring knife in the bowl and rubbed her arms furiously on her apron. Nursing her rising anger, she turned to him with a stony face.
What's the meaning of this?
We're here to get some of what you must have under that dress.
Sally took two purposeful steps to the table and picked up her clutch purse. Men had seen the expression in her eyes and known fear before, but this pair hadn't a clue. Her scorn aimed directly at Jason. She calmed herself as she shoved a hand into the open purse. Buck, the bolder of the two, reached for her. White men alone on the streets of Chinatown stood out markedly in the daytime. Particularly one as big, strong, and purposeful as Smoke Jensen and Louis Longmont. The denizens of the Chinese quarter gave them blank, impassive faces. The few who would talk to them, or even acknowledge they understood English, made uniformly unsatisfactory replies.
This is getting nowhere. We waste our time and make a spectacle of ourselves, mon ami.
We'll give it another quarter hour, then try the local police.
When the quarter hour ended, they had come to the conclusion it would be a good idea to give it up. They had turned on the sidewalk to retrace their steps when Tyrone Beale and his henchmen located them.
There they are! Let's get them!
This time, they had the forethought to bring along guns.
On your left!
We gotta move, Pard! There's too many of them!
Excite them all!
They reloaded on the run, blundering along behind. Furious railroad police overturned carts of produce and dried fish. Smoke spotted a dark opening and darted into a pavilion stall to replace the last cartridge in its .45 Colt. A squid-eyed hard case saw Smoke duck out of sight and came in after him. His mistake.
He's over there!
Smoke slid his keen-edged green river knife from its sheath and cut his way to freedom through the back of the stall. Tyrone Beale looked on in disbelief as his magnificent plan began to disintegrate. How could two lone men create such havoc among his men? Granted, they were a wild, woolly lot, but he had managed to instill enough discipline in them that they fought together as a unit. And here and now, they seem to forget all they have learned.
Get them, you stumbling idiots! They went down the main street!
Five or six obeyed at once. Others continued to mill around. They poked six guns into the faces of the frightened Chinese and overturned their displays of goods.
You'll not find them that way, you worthless curs!
He had sent to the railroad yard for reinforcements, and it looked to Beale as though the stupidest of the lot had responded to the summons. He had no time to stay here and reorganize this mob gone wild. He headed along the central artery that led to this marketplace. Ahead, he saw three of his better men closing in on the one called Longmont. Well and good. Put an end to him, and then go after Jensen. Louis Longmont had a revolver in each hand, and the left one a double-action Smith & Wesson Russian .44. He crouched, eyes cutting from one hard case to the other. Only one of them had a firearm. The other two wielded knives and pick handles.
These have to be some of the stupidest men I've ever seen. Hey! Over here!
The three men turned and looked in Louis's direction.
Impossible!
Tyrone Beale knew it was all over. He could see that clearly. Only five of his men remained upright, and three of them had been wounded. Self-preservation dictated that he get the hell out of there, and fast. He didn't delay. He would report to Heck Grange. Heck would know what to do. These two were inhuman. Nobody was that good. But his eyes told him differently. Quickly, Tyrone Beale turned away from the scene of carnage and broke into a trot, departing Chinatown by the shortest route. His course took him to the railroad of the California Central. There, he banged in the office of his superior, Chief of Railroad Police Hector Grange.
Heck, goddammit, we got wiped out!
Did the Chinks turn on you?
Some of them did near the end, but it was Longmont and Jensen. I saw it with my own eyes. We gotta do something to stop them.
Well, we could start by filing a complaint with the city police.
Well, what good will that do?
You got cotton between your ears? Mr. Murchison is a pillar of the community, right? He owns the mayor, the police, the city fathers, even the judges. So you put together a story as to how these two troublemakers, wanted for crimes against the railroad, were located by some of your men. They opened fire without warning and killed our policemen. You follow so far?
Yeah, I think I do. We put the blame on them, send the regular police after them.
And when we get them in court, they get convicted and hanged. End of problem. Now get on it.
Inspired by Hex's confidence, Beale departed faster than he'd arrived.
Stay on your knees if you want to live.
The instant Buck Jarvis had fallen dead to the kitchen floor, Jason Rucker had gone alabaster white and dropped to his knees.
Oh, please don't hurt me. We didn't mean nothing.
If I turn you over to the sheriff, you'll most likely hang. Why not take the easier way out with a bullet?
Please, I'd do anything. I'd take my chances with the law. Just don't shoot me.
Drag that filth out of my kitchen and clean up the mess while I think about it.
Gulping back his terror, he hastily crawled on hands and knees to comply. Slowly at first, the solemn-faced residents of Chinatown came forward. Stooped with age, one frail man with a wispy two-strand beard and a long, drooping mustache approached Smoke Jensen.
You were acting in defense of your life, honored sir. The damage done is inconsequential. I am Feng Jai. shames me that our own people have not stood up to these Qualo bandits like you have done.
I'm called Smoke Jensen, and this is Louis Longmont. You know them then?
Ah, yes. To my regret, we of Chinatown know them all too well. I recognize the one who led them. He is called Tyrone Beale. He is an enforcer for the greedy Qualo who owns the California Central Railroad. And, regrettably, most of the land in Chinatown. He and his villainous rabble have broken legs and made people disappear for a long time.
Then I am doubly glad could be of service.
It is we who have a debt to you. Earlier you asked about the Triad Society. We behaved badly toward one who is a friend. If you wish to confront the Tongs, the name to use is Shang Weili.
Smoke and Louis repeated the name several times, committing it to memory. Turned out Fong had more to say.
I would urge that you use that name cautiously. These Tong hatchet men are very dangerous.
Thank you, Fong Jai. You can see how we handle danger.
It is the Tongs, I think, who should take caution if they rain trouble down on your heads. But my warning comes from another case. It is rumored that the Triad has made an arrangement with the villains of Murchison and his two devil allies, Hobson and Huntley. If that is the case, you will encounter them again.
My friend, we have every intention of doing so.
Our great philosopher, Confucius, said, "A wise bird never leaves its droppings in its own nest." By arousing your wrath, I believe that the Triad should consider that carefully. Go in peace, Smoke Jensen, Louis Longmont. Ask what questions you wish. You will get answers.
It took them less than half an hour to learn all they could about the Tongs. Most people remained frightened of the Chinese gangsters and gave scant aid. None claimed to know where Zhang Li could be found. When they had what they could get out of the residents of Chinatown, Smoke halted Louis on the street.
We have our name now, and some idea of how the Tongs work. Now, to get those bouncers for Frank, my new place.
Where to, mon ami?
Why, to the dockyards, of course. There are always out-of-work longshoremen aplenty.
Tyrone Beale stood in the opulently furnished office he had never before visited. He held his hat in his hands, his head bowed, shame flaming on his cheeks as he repeated the account of his ignominious defeat at the hands of Smoke Jensen and Louis Longmont. Behind the huge desk, centered between two tall, wide windows, Cyrus Murchison grew livid as each sentence tumbled out.
You mean to tell me that 20 men could not stop those two?
Yes, sir. I'm sorry, sir.
You will be sorrier if you fail again. You behaved stupidly in the matter involving Wagner. You should not have beaten him so badly he could not sign. And now this. Disgusting. I'm going to give you a chance to redeem yourself. You will return to the gold fields, get me Wagner's signature on that deed. You do that, and all will be forgiven.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir. I won't mess this one up. I promise you that.
See that you don't.
With that dismissal, Tyrone Beale exited the office.
Now, we have to deal with these two gunfighters.
Cyrus addressed Heck Granger.
I want you to drop everything else you're working on. Find a sketchmaker who can draw likenesses of Longmont and Jensen. Go to our company printing plant and have engravings made and flyers printed. I want them by tomorrow morning. Then circulate them to every employee, every informant you've developed among the lowlives of this town, every barkeep, flood the entire city with them. Anyone who finds them is to report directly to you. Then I want you to file a complaint with the police. I'll contact the chief personally and get them looking for Jensen and Longmont.
That's a tall order, sir. But I am pleased you approve of my idea of bringing the regular police.
So, the idea occurred to me before that idiot Beale got the first two sentences out of his mouth. Now, as far as your men are concerned, they are to have orders to shoot to kill Jensen and Longmont on sight. Finally, there are some dirt-scratching farmers in the Central Valley who need convincing that selling to the railroad or to Hobson's Empire Mining and Metal would be good for their health. Send some of Huntley's dock wallopers out there to impress it on them. See to all of it. Jensen and Longmont first.
This is going to be harder than I thought.
Smoke Jensen and Lewis had just gotten their fourth profane refusal.
It is strange that men out of work, waiting in a hiring hall, would refuse an offer so generous in nature.
They had spent the past half hour along the harbor, with scant results for all that. So far, only a single man had taken up the offer. Burly man with bulging forearms, bulldog face, and thick bowed legs, ambled along a careful two paces behind Smoke and Lewis. He had a knit sailor's cap on his huge head, canvas trousers, and blue and white striped V-neck pullover. Smoke privately suspected he was not a longshoreman, but that he had recently jumped ship. He would do that.
Over there.
Two men sat astraddle a bench, a checkerboard between them. As Smoke approached, one picked up a black playing piece and made a triple jump.
You're cheating, Luke. I don't know how, but I know you are.
No, I ain't. You just make too many mistakes.
I don't make mistakes.
Yes, you do.
No, I don't.
Do.
Don't.
Now, boys.
That doing nothing for days on end gets to a feller.
Out of work?
Sure am. We refuse to turn back half our pay to the hall boss.
Would you like to take a job?
Sure, if we could get to keep what we earn and it ain't against the law.
Oh, it's not, I assure you.
So, what is this work you have? Cargo to unload? Sure. Warehouse clean up? Sure. We can do anything.
Speak for yourself, Luke. This job does entail some danger. You may have to fight to preserve the peace.
You ain't offering us a place with the police, are you?
Far from it. I've recently inherited a famous sporting house in San Francisco. I need some strong, honest men to keep order. Nothing about running such a place, but there is a nice young lady who is in charge. She can explain your routine duties to you. As for the other, there are some interests in town who don't want me to kick the place.
We will not be able to be there all the time. It would then be up to you to eject any of their convincers who happened around.
A bouncer, eh? I've been one before. What's it pay?
Right now, $50 a week.
I don't believe you. That's more than a month's wages.
I assure you, it's the truth.
Why, sure, mister. Far as I'm concerned, you got yourself another bouncer.
Outside the next hiring hall, Smoke Jensen and his companions came face to face with a large group of longshoremen. Smoke noted their mood to be surly at best, if not downright hostile. A barrel-chested, inverted wedge of a man stepped forward, a hand raised in a sign to stop.
That's far enough. Fellers have been poking around here long enough. It's time for you to get yourselves out of here. You too.
The man gestured to Luke and the other dock worker.
You ain't working for him, nohow. Come over here with us.
Sorry. Can't do that. I need about six more good men to work for me.
Well, you can't have them.
By whose authority?
Pointing to the sign over the doorway to the hiring hall, the aggressive longshoreman bit off his words.
You see that sign? This here's the North Star Shipping. Mr. Huntley heard what you two were up to and told me special to see you got to run off from the docks. So take a hike.
I don't think so. Now, like I said, who wants a good, decent paying job?
Smoke Jensen and Lewis Longmont returned to Francie's with six big, capable men. Two less than Smoke had wanted. Yet enough, he felt sure, to do the job. He gathered them in the spacious former ballroom, which had been converted into a saloon. Lucy joined Smoke and Lewis there. Smoke introduced her and began to outline their duties to the collection of seamen and dock workers.
Two of you will be on watch and alternating four-hour shifts day and night. You're to hold this place against anyone who comes here fixing to throw the ladies out. The weakest places are the back door to the kitchen and the French doors to the drawing room. A 12-year-old could knock them down. I suggest you put some heavy furniture in front of them. The kitchen door can be blocked with a butcher's block in the middle of the room when needed. No drinking on duty and only two drinks while off. When the emergency is over, we'll have a rip-roaring party that will be the talk of the town. Until then, I want you all sober. In the event someone tries to break in, everyone will respond. You'll be given a rifle or shotgun. Make good use of them if need be. Any questions?
Why does someone want to take over this place?
It makes a lot of money, but that's not all of it. There are some powerful men who aim to take over every saloon and bawdy house in town. I learned yesterday that they intended to start with this one. I also discovered that Miss Francie refused to sell at a piddling price. Later, she was run down by a freight wagon no one saw. I own it now, and I don't intend to let these ladies be turned into virtual slaves by anyone.
And who are these men?
Cyrus Murchison, Titus Hobson, and Gaylord Huntley.
That's why Huntley's dockyard trash set on us, right?
And we don't know that for sure. Another thing, don't wear yourselves out on off-duty time. In other words, no sampling of the wares. Any other questions?
And where will you be while we watch over these pretty doves?
Lewis and I'll be out finding a way to put an end to this cabal's schemes.
Sure you won't need some help?
What do you think?
I think we'll be missing out on a lot of fun.
None of the newly hired protectors had more questions. Smoke Jensen released them to their tasks and strolled to the front door with Lewis Longmont.
Oh, friend, we're going back to Chinatown. I want to get those Tong Thongs off our back before we go after Murchison and company.
Monty Carson, hat in hand, stood on the porch of Smoke Jensen's home on the Sugarloaf. Earlier in the afternoon, Sally Jensen had sent a hand to town to summon the lawman. Now, he listened to Sally's account of what happened. His frown deepened, and a flush rose to color his face darkly.
Why, them rotten damn polecats? Pardon my language, Miss Sally. I can't help it. You say one's dead and the other's waiting for me inside? How'd that happen?
I shot Buck when he made lewd suggestions and took a grab for me.
Good for you. I don't doubt he deserved it.
It was not pleasant, Monty.
I understand. Well, best put the other one in shackles and get him out of here.
Monty's deputy came forward with an armful of leg irons, chains, and handcuffs. He and Monty entered the house. Sally remained on the porch, preferring not to observe the conclusion of this affair. When the sheriff and his deputy returned, a crestfallen Jason Rucker accompanied them. His appearance shocked Sally. Leg irons enclosed his ankles, a chain running from the midpoint to another set of links around his waist. His wrists were restrained by thick steel cuffs and again extended from the coupling bar to his waist. Tear tracks streaked his sallow cheeks and the usual tan faded to a sickly yellow. The corpse of Buck Jarvis had been wrapped in a tarp and draped over his horse by Jason Rucker. The Morgans stood knock-kneed at the tie rail, its loose hide rippling nervously in the presence of death. Monty paused beside Sally while his deputy Frog marched Jace to his own weight and mount. She wondered how she could explain all this to Bobby.
What will happen to him now, Monty?
He'll be tried, of course. Most likely he'll hang.
I'm sorry. Oh, not that he will be punished, but I am sorry that this happened in the first place. It seems that there is something terribly wrong with a lot of the younger people these days.
Don't I know it? Well, we best be moving on. It's a long way to Big Rock. And stop fretting yourself, Miss Sally. You'll be safe enough.
Oh, I have no doubt about that, Monty. Though I will need a new purse.
Tyrone Beale arrived in Parkerville on the late train. He located the incompetent henchman in the nearest saloon. He accepted that philosophically. They could sober up on the ride to the Wagner claim. He'd be damned if he'd fail again.
Why are we going now?
Because I say we are.
It'll be dark before we get there.
That's why we're going now. We didn't do too well in the daylight, now did we?
Bet your ass.
They rode out 10 minutes later. Beale took the lead, route burned into his mind. They began the climb into the foothills along the Sacramento River as the sun sank below the coastal range. That still left ample light in the afterglow would last for a good 2 hours. Spencer had informed him that Wagner had taken on a partner, a man reputed to be good with a gun. That did not seem to set too well with Beale. It had caused him to make changes in his plan. He knew what he would do now. It varied little from his original. Of course, that could be a little rough on Wagner. Ray Wagner had returned to his claim the previous day. Some of the bruises had faded slightly, and he wore his left arm broken in two places in a sling. His ribs had been tightly bound that he moved like an arthritic old man. He had taken the precaution to bring along a burly miner friend of his as a minority partner. Let him come again, he thought. Eli Coulter had a small reputation as a shootist. He wore a six-gun slung low on his right hip, another tucked into the waistband of his trousers on the left. He could use it. Ray had seen Eli face down three rowdy highwaymen who tried to rob him. He killed two of them and wounded the third. Not a one of the robbers had gotten off a shot. He mused on this fact as he added another stick of firewood to the cooked fire in a ring of stones. Above him, blue slowly faded into gray. First stars twinkled in the black velvet of the east. A cloud of sparks ascended as he released a piece of firewood. He froze a second when his ears picked out the distinct sound of a hoof striking a small rock. Slowly, he uncoiled his body and came upright. A quick glance located Eli Coulter.
Eli, I think we are about to have visitors. Be ready.
Eli nodded. Ray glanced away from the tree line for only a moment to do so. Then when he looked back, four men led by Tyrone Beale appeared as if by magic at the edge of the firelight. Wagner braced himself, certain the showdown was in the offing. Beale dismounted and came forward. Without a word, he thrust a quitclaim deed at Wagner.
I told you I would never sign. You are trespassing. Get off my claim or I will bury you here.
You failed to profit from my previous lesson, I see. You're feeling very cocky, eh, Fritzy?
I will not sign.
Wagner went for his gun. Eli Coulter slapped leather a split second later. He never got off a shot. Two of the hard cases with Beale gunned him down before the muzzle could clear leather.
You don't have a chance. Sign it and be damned.
Raising his Mauser 10mm revolver to chest level, Wagner shook his head in the negative.
I will not.
Beale looked down at the deed in his other hand. He shrugged and signed it himself.
Got that signed at last. Mount up. We got a long ride in the dark.
Smoke Jensen and Louis Longmont spent a fruitless afternoon and evening in Chinatown. They picked up Louis's belongings at the Palace Hotel and he moved into the bordello. Morning found them at the breakfast table.
This is excellent coffee.
They're the same Columbia Arabica beans Cyrus Murchison prefers.
Murchison? How did Francie get her hands on anything he fancied?
The captain of the ship that brings them to San Francisco was a great admirer of Francie's. He always saw to it that at least one full bag got delivered here. Murchison has never known.
Smoke joined Louis in laughter. When it subsided, Louis asked Smoke the key question.
So, what do we do today?
Go back and try to find a lead to Shang-Li.
Mr. Smoke, there's two police here asking for you.
We're not at home, Ophelia.
Eyes twinkling with approval for Smoke, Ophelia left to deliver this message to the lawmen. When they learned the purpose of the visit by the police, Smoke Jensen produced a frown. This could complicate matters considerably.
Murchison is a powerful man. I reckon he's got some higher-ups in the police in his pocket. We'll have to be mighty careful going around outside here.
Perhaps a change of costume is in order.
I see what you mean. Sort of stands out around here, doesn't it? I don't cotton to the idea of fighting in fancy clothes, but the situation suggests I not look like myself.
I, too, shall change my appearance. Perhaps the clothing of a longshoreman would be advisable.
What? And give up those fancy shirts you like so much?
It was Shakespeare who said, "All the world's a stage." In this case, the actors must blend with the audience.
Faith, that's as well said as if I had said it myself.
Jonathan Swift. Polite Conversations, I believe. From Dialogue 2?
Yes. Sally made me read a lot of Swift.
And for good reason, I'd say. His characters and you have a lot in common. especially in Gulliver's travels.
Are you comparing me to a giant among the Lilliputs? Don't wax too literally, old friend. It's too early in the morning. Seriously, we're going to find ourselves with our tails in a ringer if the police get too involved in this.
Why not talk to Lawyer Brian?
Oh, so it's Brian now, eh?
He's been advising me on managing the business.
And you have grown close? No doubt. You're a lovely woman, ma chérie.
It isn't. I'm just a client. He doesn't even look on me as a woman, let alone have a romantic interest.
Time for our friend Shakespeare again. Methinks the lady doth protest too much. Yet it's entirely understandable given the circumstances. What do you say, Smoke, my friend?
I think they deserve a tad bit less prying, Lewis. Can't you be serious for 2 minutes at a time? Lucy, I agree that maybe Pullen can help. I'd be obliged if you'd go see him about all this. As a lawyer, he can look into it, find out what the police have.
I'll go right away.
Finish your breakfast first.
But those policemen might come back, and they might bring more with them.
Well, that's a thought, Lucy. Though by then, Lewis and I really will not be here.
Liam Quinn had been working for the California Central Railroad since he was a boy. First as a cook's helper and scullion, then as a switchman and telegrapher, and finally as a locomotive engineer. He was enjoying a day off with his buxom wife Bridget and their 5 dark-haired children. A small park, soon to be converted into office buildings and shops, stood across from the entrance to Chinatown. Bridget had packed a huge picnic basket with cold fried chicken, a small joint of ham, cheese, pickled herring, cold boiled potatoes, and hard cooked eggs. Liam had sent his eldest, 11-year-old Sean, for a bucket of beer. Savoring the arrival of the cool, frothy brew, Liam tore off a hunk of sourdough bread and munched contentedly, a chicken wing in the other hand. 2 men, quite tall, caught his attention across the street. Lord, they moved like panthers. A full head above other white men, head and shoulders topping the Chinese who milled about near the large moon gate, they had an air about them that riveted Liam's attention. Something about them set off an alarm in his head. Yes, that was it. Those men had the moves of gunfighters. Liam had read of gunfighters in the penny dreadfuls, and, yes, on the flyers that he had seen circulated early this morning when he checked in at the yard office to be sure he could take the day off. These two sure resembled them. He studied further, noting the rough dress of the bearded one and the somber cut of the other's suit. Certainty bloomed in Liam's brain. There was a reward offered, Liam recalled. Fat bounty on those particular gentlemen, sure and wouldn't it? He must get the word to Captain Beale or Chief Grange. His beer was going to have to wait. Nothing for it, though. He had to be the first to report them and where they might be found. Liam tossed a hasty word of explanation to his wife and promised to rejoin him within the hour. Then he hurried off down the street. Smoke Jensen and Lewis Longmont resumed their search for the elusive Jiang Wai Li on one of the many bustling new side streets of Chinatown. One shopkeeper, fear clearly written on his seamed old face and tired ancient eyes, spoke with him while he cast worried glances at the front of the shop.
Nothing good can come of your search. You are not Han. You have no idea with what and whom you are dealing.
Then the Tongs are here.
Hey! Take care in what you say. They have ears and eyes everywhere. I do not want a hatchet painted on my door. You should not want one on yours, gentlemen.
I agree. What can you tell us of Jiang Wai Li?
Buddha ni Cho Chung! To speak the name is to ask for death. Buddha, fortify me.
Look, this is getting us nowhere. You saw what happened yesterday.
Slowly, the aged Chinese nodded.
Then I reckon you should rely upon us to protect you instead of this Buddha feller. If you know anything at all, tell us how we can find Shang Li.
It is said that there is a secret place near the opera house.
The San Francisco Opera?
No. The Chinese Opera. It is that large building near the south end of Chinatown. You'll see it easy. Big pagoda with many peaks and dragon carvings. Near it is said the triads hold secret meetings. Some say underground. I not know more.
Done enough, old-timer. More than you think. Thank you.
Outside the shop, Lewis asked the question that had been troubling Smoke.
Shall we go there straight away?
Don't reckon to. We need to know a lot more about the Tongs. How many are they, for one thing? We don't want to stumble into some nest of wasps. I've been thinking, maybe we're going at this the wrong way. There must be some whites who know something about the Tongs. What say we head for those offices built into the walls that run along Chinatown?
It's worth a try.
Again, they drew blanks. Not until the fifth small, narrow office did Smoke and Lewis come upon anyone with specific knowledge. The sign on the outside identified it as an import broker's office. Inside, dusty chairs were littered about, and a large, desk-like table had been heaped with invoices and bills of lading. Seated at a cluttered roll-top desk, a slender, bookish young man in shirt sleeves and garters glanced up, his features shadowed by a green eyeshade.
You here to pick up a shipment of spices? The paperwork's not done yet.
No, actually. We stopped in to ask you a little something about dealing with the folks of Chinatown. Tell me, when you bring in things from the Orient, China in particular, do you have to deal through, shall we say, out of the ordinary agents among the Chinese?
Exactly what do you mean?
Do you have to make payoffs to one or more of the Tongs?
Yes. Anyone dealing with the Chinese has to make their, contributions. It's the way they do business. Even though I am not Chinese, I am not exempt from that rule. Tell me, why are you so interested in the Tongs?
Idle curiosity. Nah, you'd never believe that. Actually, we need to talk to Zhang Li.
Whatever for?
We have good reasons to believe that the Tong hatchet men are bent upon killing us.
Well, then the last thing you want to do is get anywhere near Zhang Li. He's the most bloodthirsty of them all. Zhang Weili is a deadly, silent reptile who gives no warning before he strikes. You wouldn't stand a chance.
Perhaps. Though I would reserve judgment, were I you?
They got a little more out of the broker, but not enough, and no confirmation of the location of Zhang's lair. Back on the street, they headed again for Chinatown, armed with new facts to prod those they questioned. To appear to be armed with more knowledge than one had often resulted in gaining what one sought, Lewis reminded Smoke. They had come abreast of the small park across the street when a shout thrust them into quick action.
Jehoshaphat! There they are! There's the men I told you about!
Smoke and Lewis looked that way to see a burly black-haired man. He stood at the curb pointing directly at them. Half a dozen railroad police gathered behind him. Two of them carried carbine-length Winchesters, which they swiftly brought to their shoulders. 10 more of the railroad thugs swarmed out of the park. That put Smoke Jensen and Lewis Longmont in considerable jeopardy. Quick evaluation of the situation decided Smoke on the wisest course of action.
Let's get out of here!
With the Murchison hireling screaming after him, Smoke and Lewis bolted into Chinatown. Pursuers rapidly lost ground. Once they entered the throng of Chinese, two with Winchesters didn't fire again. Smoke led the way toward the central marketplace. He noted with satisfaction that many of the residents of the Chinese quarter bustled themselves into the street in a manner that would block the passage of the railroad detectives. The hired guns fell further behind. Finally, the first one broke free of the obstacle. Smoke drew his Colt Peacemaker and returned fire. Smoke pounded boot soles on the street as he led the way at a diagonal across the market square. Lewis followed. In less than 5 strides, Smoke and Lewis found themselves in even more trouble. Another 10 railroad thugs appeared on their left. A slug gouged a shallow trough along the left side of Smoke's ribcage. It burned like the fires of hell. All it did was to serve to heighten Smoke's anger, though.
Take off, Lewis!
Longmont left without a remark. Smoke turned at once to face their enemies. He had little time to wait for a new target. 2 men loomed close at hand. Smoke smoke, Jensen made a dash and joined his companion. Turn 5 shattered several of the stones and released an abominable odor. Smoke stopped him, flared with the scent of sulfur and sea salt. He swiveled at the hips and fired almost point blank into the chest of his closest pursuer. 2 more long strides and Smoke rounded the odorous cart. More of the objects had been broken open by gunfire, and 3 of the barrels oozed a malevolent ichor.
What are those?
100-year-old eggs. They're not really 100 years old. Merely duck eggs preserved in sea salt and brine.
What are they for?
Chinese eat them.
Stupid yellow bastards.
Without pausing to consider that, Smoke had his hands full of burly railroad detectives and uniformed yard police. Lewis had reached his latest shelter and taken the time to reload his 6 gun. Now he opened up. Smoke was on the run. He concentrated on their goal and found the final dash to make it. He advised Lewis of that fact, but he skidded to a halt behind a stone lion carved in the Chinese style.
I figured it that way too, my friend. Shall I give you time to reload?
It would be a good idea. I don't hanker to have them follow us into that place with my iron dry.
Swiftly, without a tremble to his hands, Smoke Jensen reloaded both revolvers. Lewis kept up a steady fusillade until he had emptied his own, then ran for the beckoning archway that formed the entrance to the temple. Smoke laid down cover and fired, and as soon as he glanced at the pagoda and saw Lewis no longer in sight, he made his own hurried rush to the promised safety. Lewis blasted 2 more thugs into perdition while he backed up Smoke. And with that, 2 gunfighters disappeared into the confusion of the ensuing battle. Jason Rucker looked up disbelievingly at his visitor to the cell in the Big Rock Jail. Dressed in the height of fashion, Sally Jensen cut quite a figure in the dingy corridor of the cell block. She wore a high-necked, full-skirted dress of deep maroon, edged with black ostrich feathers. A matching hat, small and with only a hint of veil, sat perkily on her head, cocked forward in the latest style.
Monty told me you were convicted. I had no reason to stay for the rest of the trial.
Yep. They're gonna hang me.
That's too bad. You know, this whole thing has broken a small boy's heart.
Bobby? He's a kid with a lot of spunk. He's got sand, that he does. How's it broke his heart?
He hasn't spoken to me since he learned about the shooting. He won't even look at me, except with a sulky pout and eyes narrowed with hate.
It's too bad. We weren't neither of us worth that.
Why did you have to take him into your lives?
I ain't sure. It was Buck that shined up to the boy. Said it reminded him of himself at that age.
Good Lord! And he wanted to remake Bobby in his likeness?
I couldn't say, though I suspect you've got the right of it. You know, your husband is a good man, Miss Jensen. But he ought to be more careful who he takes on his help. Could get him bad hurt sometime.
I think not. Do you know who he is, Jason?
Just Mr. Jensen, I suppose.
His first name is Kirby, but everyone calls him Smoke.
Oh, my God. Well, that's how come you shoot so good. Honest truth, Miss Jensen, I reckon it's a mercy I'll face the hangman instead of your Smoke Jensen.
Sally thought about that for a long, silent minute. Slowly, she fixed her features into a mask of genuine concern.
You really regret what you've done, don't you, Jason?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Well, then there's something I must do. Your concern over Bobby and your show of remorse have convinced me that you deserve a second chance. Mind, I'm not promising anything, nor am I given to feeling sorry for criminals. But you're young, with apparently a will of your own, although it has been long in the shadow of Buck Jarvis, I wager. I'll have a talk with Monte Carson and the judge. Perhaps we can get your sentence commuted to prison time only. Don't get your hopes up, but I will try. Goodbye, Jason.
Well, goodbye, Miss Jensen. And thank you.
Come this way!
Fong Jai, who was also a monk, summoned Smoke Jensen and Lewis Longmont, and they dashed into the center of a large square area with a wood floor, red lacquered walls picked out with gold leaf, and a blue domed ceiling.
Come this way!
Smoke and Lewis shifted their gaze to the seemingly solid wall behind the old man. What good would it do to be against that wall as opposed to any other?
Hurry! There's little time!
I'm willing,
but I sure hanker to know what good it'll do.
I will take you out of the shrine to safety.
That was good enough for Smoke. He and Lewis crossed the expanse of floor. When they neared the monk, he stepped away in the direction of a fat statue of a smiling Buddha. There, he pressed a spot on the wall that looked like any other. A huge panel swung open in the side wall of the pagoda. Fong Jai waited until they reached the opening and nodded to indicate they should enter. Smoke remembered the .45 Colt in his hand and thought well in keeping it there. Their host preceded them into a dark passageway. There, he used a lucifer to light a torch and return it to its wall sconce. Smoke and Lewis stepped through what they soon saw to be a tunnel. Behind them, the secret panel clicked back into place. Smoke tightened his grip on the plow handle butt grip of his peacemaker. Fong Jai advanced down the tunnel, igniting more torches. When he had three burning brightly, he waited for his unexpected guests.
I am the abbot of this temple. We have taken notice of your activities in the past few days. It became obvious that you are fighting the evil ones. When they outnumbered you, you took sanctuary in our humble shrine. It is our duty to protect you. Follow in my steps. I will take you to a hidden place and heal your wounds.
Smoke Jensen again became aware of the gouge along his ribs. The bleeding had slowed, but it still oozed his life's fluid. A quick glance apprised him that his wound did not show.
How did you know he'd been shot?
I felt your agony. Please, to come this way. Those who seek you will be befuddled.
Cyrus Murchison pushed back the picked clean carcass of the half-duck he'd enjoyed for his noon meal. Silver bowls held the remains of orange sauce, fluffy mashed potatoes, thick dark gravy, and wilted salad greens. Beyond this gastronomic phalanx sat a silver platter filled with melting ice and a pile of oyster shells, all that remained of a dozen tasty mollusks on the half-shell. Murchison hid a polite belch behind the back of his hand and dabbed at his thick lips with a white napkin.
Well then, Judge Beatty, did you enjoy your canard de l'orange?
Most excellent, my dear Cyrus. I always look forward to dining with you. Do you eat this well at night?
Well, alas, I have been constrained by my stomach, as well as my doctor, to curtail my Epicurean adventures in the evening. A chop, a boiled potato, and some fruit and cheese is my limit of late. But I sorely miss the pig's knuckles, sauerkraut, and beer, or roast venison with pommes frites. And strawberries and cream, that I used to indulge in.
I know whereof you speak, though I fear we digress.
Oh, how's that?
You are not known to wine and dine persons of influence without some ulterior motive. What is it I can help you with this time?
Right to the point, eh? Your courtroom reputation has preceded you. That is why I dismissed the servants. Will not be imposed upon. There are going to be some transfer deeds coming before your court in the near future. Some of them will no doubt be contested. I trust you can recognize the genuineness of these instruments merely by examining them.
Is that all? Surely those excellent ducks will have gone begging for so small a favor.
You're the fox right enough, Judge. You'll be hearing a criminal matter soon. Two men charged with murder of railroad police and some of Hector Grange's detectives. The culprits are named Lewis Longmont and Smoke Jensen. To be quite upfront with you, Judge, I want to see them hanged.
That will depend a lot upon the evidence.
It need not. In order to provide binding evidence, some things might come out that would prove deleterious to the California Central. We like to keep, a low profile. You understand?
Quite so. That is asking quite a lot, Cyrus. Not that it is impossible. I shall have to examine the circumstances and evidence and perhaps find a way to accommodate you. Whatever the case, I will do my best.
Fine. Now, help yourself to some of that chocolate cream cake.
Fong Jai led Smoke Jensen and Lewis Longmont down a long incline that Smoke soon judged put him well below street level. The Chinese priest remained silent, husbanding his thoughts. As he progressed, He paused at regular intervals to light another torch. The flambeaux flickered and wavered as though in a breeze, yet the air still smelled dank and musty. Their steps set off echoes as they advanced over the cobblestone flooring of the shaft. When they reached a level space, they had only hard-packed earth beneath them. The course took them through a twisting, turning labyrinth of intersecting tunnels. Even with his superb sense of direction, Smoke Jensen had to admit that he had not a hint of where the old monk was taking them.
Where do you think he's taking us, mon ami?
I haven't the least idea.
He could be taking us directly to Murchison.
I doubt it. He could have left us for those railroad thugs.
You have a point.
They walked along in silence for a while, ignorant of their destination or even where they had been.
He could be taking us to Shang Li.
Then all the better for us. We can gun down Shang Li and end of problem.
You do not really mean that, my friend.
Fuck yeah, I do.
They walked along in silence for several lengthy minutes. Suddenly, Smoke received a hint of their destination. The sharp tang of salt air reached his nostrils. He cut his eyes to Lewis, who nodded his understanding. They made another turn, and it came to Smoke's attention that someone had come along behind them to snuff out the torches. Even if they tried, they couldn't find their way back through the mystifying maze of tunnels. Ahead of them, Fong Jai stopped abruptly before what appeared to be the inner side of the wall of a building. When Smoke and Lewis came up to him, he lifted a thick iron ring and gave it a twist. Then, a section of the wall swung inward. Bright sunlight and the stinging tang of sea air mingled with the fishy smell of the bay poured in.
This way, please.
They followed him out of the building onto a street that paralleled a section of San Francisco Bay. Fong Jai directed him to a tall, wide, wire gate and a high fence at the street end of a long pier. Jai used the key to open the fat padlock and ushered them inside. At the far end of the wharf, Smoke saw an odd-shaped ship. Its sails had been furled and the masts were stepped at a steep backward angle. The stern rose in the likeness of a turret from a castle in the Middle Ages, even more so than the caravels of 15th century Spain. On a large plank, mounted below the aft weather rail, picked out in Chinese ideograms and English letters, was the name of the ship, the Wang Pai. The bow also jutted high and square with merlons to accommodate archers. A likeness of a human eye had been painted a couple of feet above the plimsoll line. Louis Longmont soon apprised Smoke of its origin and type.
It is a Chinese junk, the largest one I've ever seen.
How astute, Mr. Longmont. It is an ocean-going junk. You will find it curious to see that it appears even bigger from inside. Our Chinese builders have a talent that way.
Jai led him to a rickety gangway that gave access to the deck of the junk. There, he directed him below decks to an aft cabin decorated in an opulent oriental style. Statuary in the form of dragons and lions, several of them covered in gold leaf, ranged around the bulkheads, which had been hung with heavy silk brocade tapestries. These depicted various subjects, among them, lovely young ladies of the court, solemn mandarins, fierce warriors astride snorting stallions, bows drawn until the wicked barbs of the arrowheads touched the arms of the bow, and a lordly emperor. Incense burned in tall brass braziers. Cushions abounded, though there was nary a chair. Low tables held porcelain bottles and small-footed cups. Did truly look as if it were too large to fit into the junk's aft quarter. Smoke took it in and found it a bit too fancy for his liking. Fringe-lined lanterns hung from the overhead in bright colors of red, yellow, and green. They swayed slightly with the movement of the water beyond the bulkheads. The junk creaked and groaned like any wooden sailing ship. Serving women appeared from one of the side rooms. One bore a tray with a large steaming pot and small handleless cups. The other had a plate of savory-smelling tidbits of food.
Dim sum, little bites. There are Chinese dumplings, steamed wonton, oysters in peanut sauce. Oh, and many more things. Refresh yourselves while I summon our doctor.
Lacking any chairs, Smoke and Lewis made themselves comfortable on cushions around the low table on which the young women placed their tea and snacks. Lewis made an attempt with chopsticks. Smoke settled for his fingers. He lifted a plump prawn from a scarlet sauce and bit off half of it.
Ooh.
At once his taste buds gave off the alarm. Sweat broke out on his forehead and his eyes began to water as he chose to chew rapidly as the best means of eliminating the fiery morsel. He didn't want to spit it out. That, he knew, would be bad manners.
Szechuan.
I don't know what that is, but it sure is hot.
It's the name of a province in China, and also a style of cooking that uses a lot of garlic and chili peppers.
More than the Mexicans, I'll grant you.
Don't use tea to douse the fire. That would only make it hotter. Try some of that rice wine in the ceramic bottle.
Is there no place you haven't visited, Lewis? No one's food you haven't sampled?
Nope. I am truly amazing.
Lewis removed Smoke's coat.
Damn. That's the only Sunday go-to-meeting shirt I brought from home.
Lewis studied the wound.
Better it is for you that you had it alone. Good clean linen. Less chance of a supuration.
That's all right. Sally loves scars. Like, really loves them. It's kind of fucking kinky. She'll tear to me like a bitch in heat when she sees this one.
Half an hour went by, according to Smoke's big Hamilton turnip watch, before Fong Jai arrived with a black-clad, bowed older man, his lined face reminiscent of a prune in all but color. With only a perfunctory greeting, he set right to work. Just like the kind a real doctor carried, he produced an assortment of herbs and lotions and a large roll of bandaged gauze. He treated both Smoke and Lewis, then leaned back on his small, skinny buttocks to chatter in rapid-fire Chinese at the priest. Fong Jai translated for the benefit of the Occidentals.
The doctor says you must take this powder in a little rice wine 3 times a day.
What's in it?
It is better that you are not knowing.
No, I want to know.
Ground rhinoceros horn, dried fungus from the yew tree, and processed gum of the poppy. There are perhaps other things, secrets of the doctor, you understand. The potion will ease any pain, strengthen you, until your body overcomes the blood loss, while the unguents he put on the wound will prevent infection.
I'm not sure about all this.
Do not your Kualo doctors do the same? They mix roots, bark, and herbs and give them to their patients. The gum of the poppy in your language is called laudanum. And does it not ease pain?
You got me there. And to top it off, our croakers give everything queer foreign names. So a common fellow don't know what it is he's getting.
Just so. There are no mysteries in Chinese healing. Now, to explain why I brought you here. Your courage and your skill with weapons have been observed and have convinced the High Council of our humble order and the elders of the community that you have been sent by the ancestors to lead a great battle against the evil dragons of the Triad Society.
How are we to go about doing this?
You are to wait here. Men will come, young men, who wish to rid Chinatown of the curse of the Tongs for all time. They are strong and good fighters, students at the temple for the most part. Now that your wounds have been mended, you will eat and rest and wait for the others to join you.
When will that be?
Later, in the dark of night. It is our hope to catch Chiang Wai-li by stealth and deal a death blow to his army of hatchet men. Now, enjoy. These delightful young ladies have prepared a feast for you. And afterward, you may avail yourselves of the baths in another part of the ship. I will return with the last of our young warriors to make certain none were followed.
After Fong Jai swept out of the cabin, Smoke Jensen went to one porthole to watch his departure from the wharf. Strangely, the frail old monk seemed to have completely disappeared. He turned to Lewis, who pressed on him a plaguing question.
What was that in service of, mon ami?
I think we found the key to dealing with Tongs and Zhang Li in particular. For now, my stomach thinks my throat's been slit. Let's eat.
Steaming bowls and platters of exotic Chinese dishes came one course at a time in a steady procession. Few, if any, did Smoke Jensen recognize. He enjoyed the pork and noodles, the egg foo young, and the sweet and sour shrimp. He balked, though, at the baby squid in their own ink, another Sichuan delicacy, which he wisely avoided after his eyes watered from the chili oil and plethora of peppers when he sniffed the pedestal bowl in which they were served. As was his custom, he tried to eat sparingly, yet when the parade of food at last ceased, he felt stuffed to the point of discomfort.
That was some food. Soup was good. Only, why did they serve it last?
It is their custom.
Tasty, even if it came as dessert. What was in it?
It was bird's nest soup.
You're funning me, Lewis, aren't you?
Not at all. Of course, they clean them first. I won't go into how the nests are made.
No, please, don't.
The young ladies appeared again then and took the pair of men to the baths. All the way to the small, humid chamber that held the bubbling wooden bath, Smoke Jensen tried to puzzle out the slightly amused, esoteric smile on the lips of Lewis Longmont. When they reached the tiny cabin, Smoke quickly learned the reason why. Both girls and Lewis began removing their clothing.
What? Whoa! hold on.
Soft light glowed on the nubile bodies of the delightful creatures while Smoke Jensen continued to gobble his protests. With lithe movements, the girls became water nymphs as they climbed the two short steps and waded into the steaming water. Buck naked, Lewis Longmont quickly joined them.
Lewis, what are you doing?
I've always appreciated a good bath, mon ami. You should join us. There are delights that surpass the imagination that follow the laving.
Thanks, Parker. I think I'll pass.
Well, I think the young ladies are disturbed over your aversion to taking a bath.
I do have that gouge along my ribs. I wouldn't do to get that wet.
You have a point. Oh, well, mon ami, I suppose I can force myself to uphold the honor of Western man.
Confounded at last, Smoke Jensen stomped from the room. Though not without a backward long glance at the precious physical endowments of the giggling girls. Then Gaylord Huntley took their postprandial stroll through the minute park named after St. Francis of Assisi, patron of the city, in the center of the cluster of municipal buildings. Tall marble columns surrounded them, while pigeons and seagulls made merry sport of the imposing bronze figure on horseback that occupied the center of the swatch of green. It was there that Heck Granger found him and spoiled the repose Murchison had generated from this good meal they had consumed.
They whooped the hell out of him.
What?
Those two, Jensen and Longmont, blasted their way through 27 of my men and flat disappeared.
That's impossible. I will not accept that. No two men can outgun 25 plus.
Those two did. They ran into a Chinese temple when my men got in there. And nowhere to be seen.
They went out a back door.
There weren't none. No side doors neither. There was just no place for them to escape.
Nonsense. I want you to take more men, go there, and tear that place apart until you find how they got out of there.
That wouldn't be wise, Mr. Murchison. The temple is in Chinatown. Even the Tongs would turn on us if we did. We only got them behind us a little while ago. It's touchy, I say.
Damn the Tongs! I never approved of allying ourselves with them in the first place.
Well, I hate to mention it, sir, but there are more of them than there are of us. I won't risk my men for that. We'll find those two, and we'll do it our way.
It's all right, Heck. I understand your anxiety. Do it the way you see best. Only don't fail this time.